Welcome to Establish the Edge. I'm your host, Mike Leone, back after week off, but we are a week out from the NFL draft, and that means more prospect content for all you people listening. We did the running back prospects podcast already with JJ Zachariasen. Also have the wide receiver prospects podcast up with Anthony Amico. Make sure to check that out either on Establish the Edge podcast on iTunes or on the Establish the Run YouTube page. I have Anthony Amico back with me now to go through the onesie positions, quarterback and tight end. Amico, thanks so much for joining me.
Of course, man. This is our time, you know? I mean, what better time of the year? I mean, we get to enjoy all these prospects. It's like a virtual GM, right? And then we get to do it all in our fantasy league, so it's good.
Yeah, it's fun. We spent all this time, you know, doing the prospect stuff, and then we see what shakes out with the NFL draft. And speaking of which, me, Amico, and Evan Silva, you know, pretty much directly after the NFL draft concludes, we're going to go through and do a rookie mock draft, first two rounds of a Superflex tight end premium, and then, you know, throw out some deep sleepers as well for that format. So I'm excited for that. Looking at the onesie positions, Amico, just generally, like it feels to me like it's a lot more difficult to project for a few different reasons. One, the sample of relevant players is a lot smaller than it is at wide receiver and running back. Two, the timelines, like especially at tight end, are a bit different. I mean, these guys take some time to develop, whereas, you know, generally the productive players at running back, wide receiver, we're seeing production right away, the rookie year of some kind. So does that make it more difficult to evaluate prospects?
Oh yeah, it's way more difficult. I mean, quarterback especially, like, you know, I was trying to do all of these articles and stuff, like what we should be looking for ETR. And it's like the quarterback samples are just so small because, you know, I mean, the first round is like the only round that basically matters. Like the day two guys, they matter a little bit. Like they definitely don't hit at zero, but it's like, you're basically looking at the first round. So you're talking about like three, you know, between two and five players a year in like most classes. Like that's just not really a very big number. So it makes it a lot more difficult. I think that it means that we need to be paying more attention to what the scouts say at quarterback in particular. You know, I it's kind of funny because I feel like when we talk about these quarterbacks, we like make fun of the NFL all the time for being like, oh, like you're just going after the traits. Like you're such a donkey. Like you're just taking the guy with the big arm or whatever. Like, but it's like, we're not really doing any better doing it like our own way. So it's like, and for fantasy, we're kind of scouting those traits mostly to begin with, because we want to know, maybe not the same exact ones, but we know we want guys who can run and stuff like that. So
no, absolutely. I feel like at quarterback for me, yeah, being spectacularly wrong on Josh Allen and having it turn out to be the best result possible, being a Bills fan, there was that, Herbert, I wasn't necessarily way out on, but I mean, he was going at like the end of first round in Superflex, yeah, tight end premium rookie drafts. And now he's, you know, a top half of the first round startup pick. Clearly a first round startup pick of all players, not just of that class. And, you know, to your point, the guys that we knew were bad, we've been wrong on, you know, some spectacularly, like Josh Allen, Justin Herbert. There have been some that we've been right-ish on, and it still hasn't mattered a ton. Like you even look at Daniel Jones. I mean, he's had, if you drafted him his rookie year, you've eked out a good bit of value, because just having a quarterback with draft capital, generally, if they're just playing for multiple years, and generally these guys get multiple years if they have a lot of draft capital, like that's pretty important. And we're going to look at this mostly from a super flex standpoint. Definitely different from a one quarterback standpoint. Of course, last year, Amico, I really tried to channel this like nobody knows. I want to go with draft capital. I'm going to take this huge discount on Zach Wilson because everyone thinks he sucks. And then he did, in fact, suck. So that one's a little scary. Again, you're getting like two full years starting out of him no matter what. But you generally want 3 to 4 plus like as your floor. And that one does look a little bit scary. So to your point though, you know, if you were to simplify quarterback prospects, I mean, it's, some of it for me is like, what's the landing spot? What's the draft capital? And what traits do they have in terms of deep passing and rushing in particular? Because I like, and I was admittedly too low on Burrow his year, because I was like, I don't know if he's going to run enough for this to be like a really high ceiling quarterback play. And if it's not a high ceiling quarterback play, I don't want to take this guy ahead of, you know, Jonathan Taylor, Clyde Edwards-Helaire that year. Yeah. And he's shown he's so good passing and can be so efficient, and that he still can escalate. So I've rambled a little bit, but I'll throw it back to you.
No, I mean, I think you bring up a lot of good points, and I think Zach Wilson is an interesting guy to talk about. Cause I mean, for us, like, we still have him like decently high up in our rankings. Like, I don't think that these guys lose value that quickly. Like, yeah, like Wilson didn't look great as a rookie, but the Jets are putting a lot of effort into, I guess, trying to evaluate him this year. They're probably going to draft a receiver. They've really strengthened the offensive line. Like, these quarterbacks that are drafted really highly, like, they get like 2, 3, 4 chances versus, you know, Jalen Hurts, who produces for fantasy, but like, I mean, I still have no idea, like, if the Eagles like him or not. Like, he could be replaced
right
any moment. So there's a lot of security, I think, baked into these guys. And, you know, if you're taken in the top 10, that's definitely something that you want to pay attention to. I think the stuff that we looked at, the rushing obviously is the biggest thing. I mean, all these guys are running now, like, for fantasy. You've talked about this just in terms of like how we look at season long prospects in general. So we would definitely want the guys that can run. I think that this class offers a couple guys that are interesting in that way. So, you know, the 2021 or the 2022 class, sorry, it's not like the best class. Like, that's what you hear all the time, but I do think it's really, really interesting for fantasy. Because we do have athletes. So it's like,
yeah,
that marriage between like the draft capital, the certainty, and like the traits. Like, I think it's a very fun class for me.
And you also, I mean, you just don't get a lot of shots at getting a quarterback on this, you know, long shelf life. And I know we've done a couple of leagues together, super flex leagues, and I've built in a couple of them somewhat, especially the one I went all in on, our quarantine auction league, which we've referenced before. And I went real cheap at quarterback, kind of like doing the short-term stop gaps, and went, you know, quantity over quality. And it worked for a couple years because I, you know, was able to load up on the other positions. Of course, you decided to just beat me the first 2 years. So I guess maybe it didn't totally work. I at least cashed each of the first 2 years. But now I've had to take a team that's okay and commit to a rebuild early, just because I'm looking at my quarterback situation and it's like, these guys are all dying soon. So the ability to get a quarterback that, I mean, if you hit on one, Amico, these guys are on your roster for 10 years.
Yep. And they're so hard to find. They're so hard to get. Like,
right. There's not many routes to get them. And even if they're not that great of producers, if they're just average for 10 years, not having to fill that spot is a really big deal. Especially if you're doing the super flex best ball leagues like we do, where now the scarcity really comes down quite a bit. Like, everybody is rostered who, you know, remotely has a pulse. So to your point, you know, if there's a little bit of upside, guys are going to get draft capital. It's a big deal, even if this class, you know, pales in comparison, especially to, you know, really the last couple of years classes. So you mentioned some traits we're looking at, like wide receiver podcast. We had, you know, thresholds for dominator rating and, you know, age for guys. I mean, what are we looking at quarterback in terms of age or production? I know you mentioned you have an article on Established to Run that, you know, outlined some of this stuff, and you mentioned looking at adjusted yards per attempt. I think the threshold there was 9 adjusted yards mm-hmm. per attempt. Yep. So in general, I know you're deferring to draft capital and the scouts a lot, but are there, you know, what are the other things you're looking at?
Yeah. So age was pretty interesting to me because I think the success of Burrow, who is like a really old rookie, like really distorted my view of the total sample, because we do have like three, four times better of a hit rate for the guys who are 20 or 21 mm-hmm. at the end of their final season than the guys who are 22 or older. So I was kind of surprised by that, just because I was like, like I said, I think Burrow is like a big part of that, but also I just assume that quarterbacks usually stay in school a little longer. So that proved to not be the case. But then in terms of like the production, like I use this metric, I called it adjusted quarterback yards per play. So you know, I think the toughest thing with evaluating these quarterback production is that like all these players are in different offenses. Yeah. And, you know, for receiver, we can kind of boil that down to being like a percentage of the production. Quarterback, it's a little tougher. So I used adjusted quarterback yards per play, which I basically defined as passing yards plus 2 times rushing yards divided by total team yards. So that's total plays, sorry. So 4.7 or more adjusted quarterback yards per play, 35% hit rate, 53% in round one, which I thought was really good.
That is really good. Yeah, that's.
And then less than that, we were like 11-12%. So that's a good number. And we'll talk about a couple of these guys a little later on. But I thought that in this class in particular, that metric was really interesting. And I will say that like widely, it's highlighting the rushing component, which is really what we want. So that's why I think we should like that metric.
And to that point with the rushing component, and I was talking with Pat Corain, and he did a show for NBC Sports Edge with Danny Kelly and some other people looking at the quarterback class. And you know, what Corain was telling me in regards to Malik Willis in particular was basically, listen, we're not very good at predicting who's going to be successful, but generally guys who are successful both for fantasy and in real life, good deep passing and rushing the football. And there's a lot of noise in between. So I know he's into like those two metrics, and he was really hyping me up on Malik Willis because he's good at those two things, even though he has a lot of question marks. And I even made a trade up to position myself to be able to draft Malik Willis. This was about a month ago. Now I'm a little bit worried, Amico, this trade I made, just because the scout stuff and the draft capital for Willis might not be where maybe we thought it was. Like, it seemed like we were pretty confident he was going to go early, and now he might not be the first quarterback off the board. We have him as a clear tier one in the quarterback class this year because of that upside from the deep passing and the rushing. So what are your thoughts on Willis, and how does that change based on, you know, what segment of the draft he goes in?
I mean, Willis is just gonna, like, the second he's in the league, he's going to be one of the three or four best rushing quarterbacks in football.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have that in your back pocket, it's really difficult to not like someone, I think, for fantasy. Like, we'll see what happens with other stuff. Like, the passing is going to be what determines his career, obviously. But like, he's going to step in right away and he's going to produce fantasy. Like, when we were coming into this class, like, I was kind of looking at Willis as like, oh, well, the league really liked Trey Lance last year, so now they're just trying to find like the next Trey Lance, and they're just kind of pegging that as Willis. But the longer that I've been thinking about this, like, I really don't see like a huge difference between the two. I mean, I will note that Willis is a year older than Lance, and Lance already has been in the league for a year, so that's important. But like, we have no idea if Trey Lance is any good. And he didn't start really like many games last season. Yeah, he could be terrible, you know? So outside of like the fact that he's not going to end up with Kyle Shanahan, like, you know, we'll probably do our next big ranking update after the draft, but like, I'm going to probably move Willis way up because like the rushing is going to be so good and the floor is so good that like, once he's playing, the value is going to be really high and will probably stay pretty high versus someone like Hurts, who we mentioned before, where it's like, even when he's really good, the value isn't that high because people aren't sure if he's going to start long term. So like, you know, Willis is going to have, he's going to be a first round pick, even if he doesn't go until like the mid or late first. And, you know, he's going to have like 3 or 4 years for us to kind of figure this out.
Yeah. So it's basically like you could get the Hurts production with a little bit more job security, and that's going to boost the value quite a bit. Right now we have him number 2 overall in our Superflex tight end premium rankings. We have Drake London first, Breece Hall third. We'll see what happens with the draft capital and landing spots there. But it's interesting. We have, you know, Willis is this tier one because of that rushing upside, but is he even the favorite to be QB1 right now? Is that now Pickett or?
Well, I mean, Willis is the favorite in the betting market. I would say that he's probably still the favorite. I don't think he makes it past 20. The Steelers pick 20. It sounds like they really like him. So I think that's his floor. And then it, to me, it just becomes a matter of like how many other teams like him. because if other teams like him, then maybe there becomes like this bidding war and teams trade up the board a little bit. I don't think any of these quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10, but I would say like between 10 and 20, that's really where we're going to see these guys come off.
Okay. And let's move on to Pickett. He checks a lot of boxes, as you noted in your prospect profile for him, 9.75 adjusted yards per attempt. Could see that good draft capital in the first round, even if it's not super early. A little bit older though, and the rushing upside, like he run a little bit, but it seems like you think the rushing upside here is somewhat limited. So somewhat of a mixed bag, like a guy we think could be the first of these quarterbacks to start and play, but the upside is a question mark.
Yeah, like he's gonna run a little bit. He's not a zero. He's not Mac Jones, but like he's not Aaron Rodgers probably either, you know, like prime Aaron Rodgers. He probably is not that much anymore. But like I was having this conversation with Corrine last week, like the best possible outcome of Pickett is like Ryan Tannehill or something. Like he starts, like he'll start for a while. He's never going to have like crazy upside. He's just going to be like a QB2. So when I try to think about how that works into the rankings, like, yeah, he's going to have a little more security, but you know, I was reading McGinn's like draft preview today. He did the quarterbacks actually happen to come out today. And like, there was one scout that was like, Pickett's probably going to start, but like he's already reached his ceiling. Like he's not going to get any better, which is like, that's not good. You know? Like,
yeah.
So we might get some starts right away, but like I would probably still rather have Corral. I would rather have Ridder. Depending on where Howell goes, I'd rather have Howell. Like just because those guys can all run, they're going to run more and their ceilings are higher.
Yeah, and we have basically a second tier quarterbacks with these guys clustered pretty tightly. We have Ridder 9th overall in our Superflex Titan Premium rookie rankings, Howell 14th, Pickett 13th, Corral 10th. So a little bit of a gap. And again, the upside pushing Ridder and Corral above Pickett, even though the draft capital is more in question. And just like overall strategy, Amico, it is somewhat of an interesting year to draft a quarterback if you need one without giving up a lot of capital in terms of your super flex. I mean, you can, if you're picking at the end of round one, unless the market, you know, just goes a little bit quarterback crazy, like there might be a chance with a back end of round one pick that you're getting. You can at least take a shot, a realistic shot at a quarterback. Whereas I think last year we had, you know, obviously the elite guys, but then we had, you know, someone you hit on was like Davis Mills, but there was him and who was it for Tampa Bay?
Trask.
Everyone. What's that?
Trask.
Kyle yeah. Trask. And those guys were like clearly like third round, you know, start, you know, picks. Yeah. In rookie draft. So there's this more of this middle ground. I guess this is kind of like where Mac Jones went last year. But Mac could have even been a little bit earlier if it wasn't for the insane competition that he had in those rookie drafts. So some opportunity there if you want to take a stab at one of these quarterbacks. And again, you have Ridder and Corral higher. Corral, I know some of the flags you mentioned, like a little bit older, the draft capital is a little bit more uncertain for him. He's kind of light, but he does have those rushing chops. He has a really good comp set. I mean, you looked at some of his player comps and you know, you could definitely see where the upside would be there for him.
Yeah, the biggest question for Corral, and this is something the numbers aren't really going to capture, is the system that he's coming from, because the Lane Kiffin system, like a lot of RPOs, a lot of very easy reads, like you know where the ball is going, basically. You don't have to do like these full field reads that maybe you have to do in the NFL now. Like I do think that some of that stuff is like coming into the league more and more each year because that's what players are doing in college. But how he makes that adjustment is going to be pretty important. I mean, it sounds like he's going to go somewhere either in the late first or the early second. I don't really think that he would make it past Seattle twice. Seattle picks at 40, so that's, I think, kind of his floor. And, you know, once he gets in the room, then anything can kind of happen. Like, you know, he is a little light, which is concerning because the way he plays, like, he plays like way more physical than his body probably would allow him to. But I think that the, again, like the ceiling is good enough where it's kind of worth just taking the shot because we know that he can move and he has like at least like an NFL pedigree.
Yeah. And then we have Desmond Ridder, who you actually have right now as the QB2 out of Cincy. And it was interesting you noted in his write-up that he has pretty good speed and you almost seemed like you were wondering if he would run more at the NFL level. I know for me, like Josh Allen was someone that we didn't know he was going to run as much as he did. Now he was like obviously a really big guy with a lot of athleticism and maybe we should have seen that coming. I know another thing that I applied to Zach Wilson that hasn't come to fruition yet was a similar line of thought of, okay, he didn't run a lot in college, but he has the athletic ability to do so. Is that sort of how you view Ridder, where we're going to have like this base rushing, but there's potential for more?
Yeah. Like, I mean, he ran in the 4.5s. Like, he's the only quarterback. I would assume that Willis would have also, but he's the only quarterback that like broke that 4.6 threshold that is in the article up on the site. But the scouts like all noted that he doesn't really utilize it as frequently as maybe he could or he should. That could definitely change in the NFL. Like, you know, I think that sometimes these college systems, they can keep quarterbacks like under wraps. He was on a good team. Like they made the playoff and all that stuff. So it's not like he necessarily probably had to scramble around a lot and make plays that way. It's also probably just good, right? Like, I mean, if you have that, like I think about Russell Wilson a lot, like always a guy that could run, but he was always like, you know, keep your eyes down the field, like make plays with your arm when you can, like, that's probably good for like his long-term NFL career, if that's a trait. So I'm not super worried about it. I think that the speed like means that when he does break the pocket, like he can make big plays and maybe he goes to a team that decides to utilize that with, you know, design runs and stuff like that. I mean, that's really the ceiling, right? Like you mentioned the Josh Allen thing. Like if he goes to a team that's like, hey man, like we think you can throw, but like you're actually really fast. So we're going to run you a little bit. Like that's good for us. So there's definitely some ceiling there.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see where these guys come in the actual NFL draft. I know with Sam Howell, you had noted, I mean, there's potential for him to be as high as QB2 for us in this class, but you know, we're concerned about the draft capital. So right now, he's actually the last of our ranked quarterbacks in this tier before we have like a really big drop off and start getting in the third, fourth round type guys. So how do you view Howell?
I really like him. Like, I'm not really sure where he's going to get drafted. A couple things like this morning on ESPN, they were saying that maybe the league likes him more than like the media guys do. And like, I can totally see why. Like Howell, just first of all, a really interesting career because in 2020, he's playing with all these NFL guys. Like he has Dyami Brown, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. And he's like throwing the crap out of the ball, like 11 yard adjusted yards per attempt, like playing really, really well passing. Then they lose all those guys. Like now, like 2021, he has like no NFL talent on his team. And they kind of like directed more of the offense on his shoulders. So this is where like that adjusted quarterback yards per play, I think really highlights the ceiling because in 2020, 4.61, 2021, 5.75, like he was running the ball so much more last year because they didn't really have the weapons. So they ran him. He's like a smaller, stockier guy. Like unlike Corral, like Howell was someone that was able to like take some punishment, like finish runs. So I think that like what he did was really impressive and really difficult to do. I'm very curious to see what happens. Like if he somehow gets into the first round or like if it's really early day two, I'm still probably going to push him up the board a decent amount. His betting line is like 47.5. So like right now the market is saying like middle of the second round, that's like not as good. But if he beats that number, like I'm going to be pretty optimistic. Like I don't know. Like I just think that he has like a different kind of gear that these other guys don't have. And the comps are still really good. I mean, like Watson, Dak, Mariota even like was someone who was able to produce for us for a little bit. Like he has to me like one of the best comp sets as well. So
nice. Yeah. And again, when we see the draft capital, we can speculate a little bit more on what the immediate playing time is going to be. It seems like it's kind of shaky for this class, which again, if you're thinking long-term and your rookie drafts might present an opportunity where these guys fall a little bit further than they should. How do you have any thoughts right now, not knowing the draft capital yet, as far as which guys are most likely to give immediate production. I think we think Pickett is the guy that's most likely to start right away, but beyond him.
Pickett is like the only guy, like if you set a line at like 8.5 starts, like Pickett's the only guy I would consider taking the over on for this year. Because I mean, I think Willis, even though he's going to go in the first round, is like universally considered like a project. Mm-hmm. And all these teams, like, you know, whether it's the Steelers, the Lions, like they all already have a bridge quarterback. So I think that wherever he goes, he's probably going to sit. And then, you know, Corral and Howell aren't really regarded as highly. So I think Ridder is like a little bit in between. I think he's a bit of a wild card. Maybe he could play immediately in some capacity. But I think for the most part, like we're waiting for mid 2022 and obviously 2023.
Yeah, let's go over to tight end. Another position that, you know, is pretty difficult to evaluate. Again, not only do we have the smaller sample, but especially at this position, it seems like Amiko guys just take a little bit while to get there. And I'm like trying to be mindful of that even as I'm managing my roster with some of these guys that didn't hit like year one or year two, to be patient with them. I'm just understanding that. I mean, like we saw someone like Albert O had a tough time, you know, cracking the field, and now his dynasty stock has risen so much, you know, with the addition of Russell Wilson and Noah Fant, and he has been successful. He's got that athleticism. So, and even like someone like I guess Kelsey produced pretty quickly, but it was age 25, right? Like by the time he had a productive fantasy season, so he was a bit older. It just takes a while. I've always had an affinity for focusing on the athletic tight ends because the floor at this position is like so nil for everyone that I want that meaningful upside. And you mentioned too, like we really do care a lot about athleticism, your tight end prospect right up as far as what we're looking for. And any tight ends that can come close to the wide receiver breakout thresholds is obviously a big plus.
Yeah, we're like ratcheting up the risk tolerance like super, super high on this position because like you said, it's like so many of these guys are zeros or like not even zeros, just like not difference makers. You know, like there's only really a handful of guys that do that.
I mean, look at redraft. We've got from like tight end 10 to tight end 20, I could shift the percentage of target share in our current redraft projections and a guy could be at, you know, the top or the bottom of those rankings.
Yep. Yeah. And the league doesn't really value the position as highly. So tight end is like the one position where you see like even into the fourth round, you have a pretty decent hit rate in terms of the draft capital. So the draft capital is almost like, obviously it's not completely muted, but there is a lower emphasis, I would say, placed on, you know, maybe being in the first couple of days because you could be picked in round four and, you know, the difference between round three and round four is like 2% in terms of hit rate. And that I will add also that that's part of why like it takes a while maybe for some of these guys because like they're not like given the opportunity right away because of their draft capital. Like they really do have to earn it.
And that would smooth out where you're drafted. You know, it's like, right. Like a quarterback getting drafted early, there's right or wrong, there's a sunk cost, you know, philosophy with these teams. Like those guys are going to play, they're going to see the field. But yeah, once you start, you know, late second to the fourth, and these guys take the time to develop anyways, it's going to be a little bit more merit-based, a little bit more skill-based than just what the initial investment was.
Yep. And you need to read the write-ups. Like you need to read the write-ups on these guys because even if the athletic profile is pretty good, like you need to know if any of these guys are just straight blockers, which happens like all the time. You know, team takes a blocking tight end in round two, like don't go crazy. Like he's still just going to block. Yeah.
The blocking cuts two ways though. You do not want a guy who's a straight blocker, but we're mentioning these guys, they take time to see the field. One way they can get on the field a little bit quicker is they do have the ability of the block. If you have that dual threat ability and you know, our top ranked tight end, tier one tight end is Trey McBride. You have him right now as like a mid second round super flex tight end premium league. And that's pretty comparable to Pat Freiermuth. That's where he went in most super flex tight end rookie drafts last year. He's a mother effing Mackey award winner. Shout out Evan Silva, But yeah, you had noted it, like his ability to block should allow him to see the field sooner. And he has a pretty strong comp set. I mean, he's the clear T1 in this class, right?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, I mean, he's like a minus 400 favorite to be the first tight end off the board. So
yeah,
we feel pretty comfortable that he's going to be drafted like in the second round, and he's a receiver. Like he tested more athletic than it sounded like a lot of the scouts were expecting, which is good. And like, there's enough tight end needy teams where it's like, you know, if he gets drafted by like the Bengals or something where like he's playing right away in some capacity in a good offense, like that's going to be really good for him. So to have 1,000 yards receiving as a tight end, like, I don't really care where you played. Like that's really impressive. So he has the best production in the class. Like he has good enough tested athleticism where I think we can be fairly optimistic. You know, he's not going to be a Kyle Pitts, but he's going to have his chances.
Yeah. And the comp set that you have, I mean, most of these guys were productive in one way or another. You've got Fred Davis, Josh Oliver on the low end, Hunter Long, who, you know, again, got guys take a little while. We'll see what happens with him. But even like Lance Kendricks had some production, Eric Ebron, Harrison Bryant, Tyler Eifert, Mark Andrews, Greg Olson, and then Pat Freiermuth, ironically. I mean, that's a pretty strong comp set overall. It doesn't scream insane upside, but like all those guys produce for the most part at a position where the hit rates are extremely low. I know there's a couple of misses in there.
Yeah, I mean, I again, like the sample sizes aren't tremendous, so it's hard to avoid all the busts. But yeah, I mean, the comps are good enough where we're feeling, again, like the athleticism isn't going to get him into like that upper tier, but like the Greg Olsons of the world as like your ceiling, like that's still pretty good. Like mid tight end one potential is definitely something that's valuable. I mean, you've seen in these leagues, like tight end goes like so overlooked, but it's like, if you're playing in super flex tight end premium, especially if it's best ball, like having like a couple tight ends that have potential, like you end up by the end of the year, like really having a big difference in the scores because those points add up.
Yeah, I mean, a four catch outing is going to be an outing that you use in any right. capacity. The tight end that I'm, you know, a lock to overdraft just because I'm obsessed with the athleticism is Jelani Woods.
Oh yeah,
and Woods, who you noted in your write up on him, has a RAS score, that's relative athletic score, of 10.0. So, as far as physical freaks, Woods is here. But the production, not necessarily there. Really great final season. But, you know, tell us a little bit about that route to get to that strong final season of Miko.
Yeah, just the most interesting dude. Like, he was a quarterback in high school. He was recruited to Oklahoma State as a quarterback. And then he was playing scout team as a freshman to try to give the team, like, a look for Mark Andrews, because they were going to play Oklahoma. And the team was like, you might actually be pretty good at this. Like, maybe you should just be a tight end. So the issue is that like Oklahoma State uses, like, they call it cowboy back, where it's like basically like an H back role. Like he moves like around the formation. Like they're not like highlighting this position as like something that's going to receive a lot of volume. So to really get that volume, he had to transfer to Virginia, which he did for his final season. And, you know, then the production kind of came. So I think like looking at Woods is interesting because this learning curve at the position is something that we already acknowledge as being longer than the other positions. And then he also like wasn't playing that position until he was maybe like 19 years old. So yeah, I think that makes it a little easier to excuse the fact that he didn't have peak production until that final season and that he's a little older. I think that I'm okay with that. I don't want to get like too excited. Like, you know that Kelsey did like the same thing. But the athletic profile is just so worth betting on. Like, he's huge. Like, he obviously isn't Rob Gronkowski, but like he looks that way compared to these college guys because he's big. Like, and they played him in the slot. Like, he runs routes. Like, maybe they aren't the best routes, but he's running them. You know, like that's valuable. Like, the right team can definitely take him and use him, you know, as a unique weapon in the NFL.
Yeah, runs a 4.6 at 6'7", 253. That's a load to handle there. And his comps too, you know, kind of bear it out. Again, this is all small sample size stuff, but he's got a little bit more misses than the comps on McBride, but he's got Kelce and Kittle in his comp set, which, I mean,
the ceiling you want.
We're, you know, again, the floor on all these guys is so low. Like, give me that ceiling. Cause if you walk into that ceiling or anything close to it at any point in time, it's just such a massive swing for your entire team in Dynasty. Like, having an elite tight end from a rookie investment swings your Dynasty team, I feel like, perhaps like more leverage than anything else possibly could.
Yeah. And this class isn't that good. Right. And this class isn't that good where it's like, you know, if you take a mid to back half of the second round pick on Jelani Woods, like, you're not missing on studs. You know, like last year you would have been passing up on like some guys we really, really liked in that range. But I mean, Isaiah Spiller, Brian Robinson, Pierre Strong, like, you know, these are guys that we like a little bit. Like, we don't think that they're terrible, but they don't have the ceiling that would prohibit us or should prohibit us from taking a guy like Woods.
Yeah, another guy with some upside, Greg Dulcich out of UCLA. He broke out at the wide receiver thresholds that we use as a junior, which is good. He can make some big plays in the passing game. You have him as the tight end 3 right now, I believe, in our ranks. How do you feel about Dulcich?
Yeah, he's like the last guy that I really like, I think, fantasy wise, or that I would say like we can feel the best about fantasy wise. Walk on, like, again, like, I love the stories and some of these guys, like Stone walk on, like, ends up earning a scholarship, and then like the last 2 years, like, he just crushes. You know, probably could have come out last year, stays the extra year. I think we're gonna see that a lot this year just because the COVID stuff. So, you know, the speed, I think he tested a little slower than people were thinking. It sounded like I was listening to a lot of the podcasts in like February, and it seemed like they thought maybe he'd be more in that 4.6 range. And they actually gave him a 4.6 like when it first started. But you remember like the combine, like they had like 4 hours later, they like changed all these times and he was a 4.7. So he was a little slower than we thought, but like the rest of the athletic profile is still very good. And 4.7 obviously isn't terrible. But the production is good. I think being able to average like so many yards per catch, over 17 and a half yards per reception for his career, like, that's a good number and a tough number to get. I will note that like the volume, you know, obviously we're looking at a lot of the market share stuff. The raw volume isn't super high just because the Chip Kelly offense, like, they're going to run the ball a lot. They're going to take like shot plays and stuff like that. So he's not, he hasn't caught like as many passes, you know, like him having like the 30% yardage share at UCLA is like not as good as McBride, you know, having 1,000 yards and hitting those numbers at Colorado State, but it's still notable. So, yeah, I think that this is like where we see a really big break in the rankings, just because, like all the guys after this, like Isaiah Likely, I feel like has really fallen a lot throughout the process. There's a bunch of like mid blocking types. And then there's Jeremy Ruckert, shout out Lindenhurst, went to the same high school as me. So that's cool. But he like hasn't done anything in the pre-draft process. Like, we have no idea like where he is athletically or anything like that. So he's like the one guy that maybe could get into this range if he gets the draft capital. It's just like,
injury?
He like hurt his foot during the Senior Bowl.
Okay.
So he hasn't been able to work out or anything like that. So, but he's someone that like, I remember like Brewer was saying like had a chance, and this is months ago, like, I think this chance is gone, but like could have been like the first tight end of the board because he was like the best blocker out of all these guys. And it seems like the scouts feel as though he was underutilized as a receiver at Ohio State, which is like not really surprising. So he has some potential, but I would say the three guys that we've talked about, you know, McBride, Woods, and Dulcich, make up like that clear upper tier.
Yeah. So if you're the mid back end of round one, mid back end of round two, good year to get your onesie positions and take some shots, you know, end of round one with the quarterbacks we went over, end of round two with the tight ends we went over. Amico, thanks so much for going over this with me. The stuff's super interesting. Again, make sure you also check out the wide receiver podcast that I did with Amico, the running back prospect. podcast I did with JJ Zacharyson, get you all prepped prior to the NFL draft. And again, we will hit up a full two round Superflex tight end premium dynasty rookie draft mock draft with me, Amico, and Evan Silva. Should have that live for you on really the Monday following the NFL draft next weekend. And then I know all my rookie drafts start basically immediately after. So it'll be a fun time. I also want to do another podcast separately from just that mock draft podcast. We're going to do and put out another one that's just looking at overarching strategy as to how to attack your rookie draft based on, you know, what kind of position your team might be in. So make sure to check out Establish the Edge on iTunes, on YouTube. Give us a like, rate us, review us. That helps a ton. And good luck, everybody, in your rookie drafts.